So this chapter 25 is called The Descriptions of the Characteristics of King Puranjan. Maitreya Uvacha Iti Sandishya Bhagavan Bharhi Shadai Abhipujita Pashyattam Rajaputranam Tatraivantardhadhiharaha. Translation. The great sage Maitreya continued speaking to Vidura. My dear Vidura, in this way Lord Shiva instructed the sons of King Barhishad. The sons of the king also worshipped Lord Shiva with great devotion and respect. Finally, Lord Shiva became invisible to the princes. Purport. This chapter contains a great lesson concerning the monarchical kingdom in the days of yore. When King Barhishad was considering retiring from the royal duties, he sent his sons to perform austerities in order to become perfect kings for the welfare of the citizens. At the same time, King Barhishad was being instructed by the great sage Narada about the material world and the living entity who wants to enjoy it. It is therefore very clear how the kings and princesses were trained to take charge of a kingdom. Welfare activities for the benefit of the citizens were aimed at understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The human form of life is especially meant for understanding God, our relationship with Him, and our activities in His service. Because the kings took charge of the spiritual education of the citizens, both the king and the citizens were happy in Krishna consciousness. In this regard, we should remember that the monarchical hierarchy of Prachina Barhishad comes from Maharaj Dhruva, a great devotee of the Lord and the most celebrated disciple of Narada Muni. King Prachina Barhishad was then too much engaged in fruitive activities due to performing different types of yagyas. One can actually be promoted to higher planetary systems or to the heavenly kingdoms by performing various yagyas, but there is no question of liberation or going back home back to Godhead. When the great sage Narada saw that a descendant of Maharaj Dhruva was being misled by fruitive activities, Narada took compassion upon him and personally came to instruct him about the ultimate benediction of life, Bhakti Yoga. How Narada Muni indirectly introduced the Bhakti Yoga system to King Prachina Barhishad is very interestingly described in this 25th chapter. Anyone remembers what is this interesting way of introducing Bhakti Yoga? It continues for four chapters of Bhagavata, this instruction, through a story, allegorical story of one king, King Puranjana. So that's the name of the chapter, Descriptions of a Characteristic of King Puranjana. So we'll see this chapter is the introduction, the beginning of the story, and then continues for three more chapters. So the instruction of the sons of King Prachina Barhishad took one chapter, and they were instructed by Lord Shiva, and now Narada Muni will take more time, because Prachina Barhishad seems he was deeply engrossed in material activities, and he himself realized that. Actually, he will say, when Narada Muni came to him, and he said, "Well, my mind is really bewildered by fruitive desires, and I'm engaged in all these karmakanda yagyas. So please help me to get out of this entanglement." And then Narada Muni started telling him a story, and through this story, he actually showed him that's his life, what he's leading, and how one is exactly entangled in material existence. So here, Prabhupada makes a point in the beginning of the purport that spiritual education is very important in society to make every citizen happy, and it was a duty of the higher classes of society, namely the rulers and the educators, the brahmanas, to help others receive that spiritual education. So we hear that the kings, the saintly kings, Rajarshis, they were trained for that. And being trained, they were giving themselves examples of perfect behavior of great devotees, and also they were making sure that the people under their care, the citizens, also educated in a similar way. So this is the standard. But when the brahmanas and the kshatriyas become corrupted, then the whole system collapses and it becomes perverted. So this was common in the whole world, not many centuries ago, let's say up to probably 11th, 12th, 13th century. Even in Western Europe, in the Middle Ages, there was this common understanding in society that the goal of life is to go to the kingdom of God. It's to attain salvation or liberation in the East. And this was everyone knew that, you know. This was the prevailing education, and the church was in charge of education in general. And the priest was supposed to train other people, the kings were supposed to follow and give examples or make sure. And there are examples of kings like Charles in the 8th century. He was one of the initiators of education in large scale in Europe, Western Europe especially. And of course his primary man who was doing that was a famous priest. The emphasis was on spiritual education. But later on, priestly class became so corrupted, and the kings also. So they introduced different perverted systems of, for example, the indulgency. You pay for your sins, especially for the sins of your previous, your forefathers, your family. So the church was selling, benedictions or freedom from sin. So you pay something, certain amounts, everything was, calculated, and then you get rid of this sin and that sin. And that become, and then people, common people, could see that these priests were living an abominable life of sense gratification, nothing up to the pure standard which was set up by Christ and his disciples. So they were disgusted, they rejected. Either they came up with new ways of interpreting the Christianity, like later on split into Protestants, like that. Or they completely rejected religion and they started pursuit of pure truth, beyond religion through the so-called enlightenment. And after that, after the enlightenment of 14th, 15th century, actually enlightenment is coming late versus the Renaissance, and then the enlightenment, this common culture was lost. And this happened also, of course, we know in the so-called caste system in India. Very rarely you could see pure Brahminical standards or those who are ruling to exhibit that. Practically now is lost. So this is very much dependent on the ruling class and the Brahminical class. That was one point Prabhupada made. And then the other is that by performing yagas, one can get actually promoted to higher status of material life, but will never be able to attain liberation. So these yagyas are a way of prescribed in the Vedas for a certain class of people who are attracted to material enjoyment, and this is actually most of the people, because sometimes we become bewildered why there are so many instructions, so many scriptures. Vedas are so big, there are prescriptions worshipping this demigod, that demigod, and this is there because there are so many desires. Each kind of worship is specifically dedicated to some fulfillment of some desire, You know, if you want to get a good husband, a good wife, you worship such and such. If you want to have a good health, if you have good education, good birth, and if you want to go to higher planets, to this planet, to that planet, and so many things. So you have to do this thing particularly. And because of all these desires, the worship is prescribed. Why? Because by gradually doing this, following the Vedic way, people understand that there is higher authority, and eventually they will develop intelligence that actually this, because it's clearly described even in Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna mentions that those who perform these yagas, pious activities, they go up and then they go down again after it expires their pious credit. So then they do more pious activities, they go up and then they go down, they go up and down. So it's like a merry-go-round, you know, again and again. And so at one point, you know, it clicks that what is the use of all that? You know, is the purpose of life just going up and down? And then is the inquiry into knowledge, you know, what is the real truth? What is the real substance of everything? And that's jnana. You know, after karma comes jnana. So the real thing is you can never be happy by this going up and down in material existence. We have to get liberation. So this is jnana. And after that, one understands that even liberation is not sufficient to fulfill the desires of the souls, which is to have a personal exchanges. It's not just liberation into nothingness or to light alone, but to associate with the Supreme and his servant. So then comes bhakti. And after that, what comes? It comes pure bhakti, uttama bhakti, which is not even desire for liberation. It's desire for just giving pleasure to Krishna and nothing else. And this is called uttama bhakti, and it is very, very rare. Because in all the other steps, all other processes, there is some personal motivation. There is, what is in it for me? If I do this, what I gain? And this concept is so much, you know, into kind of, how to say that, so much, we're so much conditioned by that it's hardly even to imagine how can we live and how can we act without a personal motivation. So even in the religions, you know, where you're supposed to serve God, it's you know, even if in the bhakti yoga process, it's difficult to come to that stage of giving yourself without expectation of any return. And of course, in our tradition, this comes, you know, this is a special mercy and glory of Srila Prabhupada. He just presents this most sublime concept in such an elegant way right from the beginning. You open any book and you see immediately that the highest standard is pure devotional service. So it's there, although it's so difficult and it's so rare, as Srila Rupa Goswami says. In other places, you cannot see it. I actually haven't came across. I mean, there are people in other traditions also who have this ideal, but it's very rare. There was one in the Middle Ages, also one saint who started preaching this idea of we shouldn't worship the God and pray to God to get something. We should do it for his pleasure, not for ourselves. And nobody could understand, you know. It's like you study history, and he was like really weird concept, because even those who commit themselves to renounce the world, like monks and nuns, there is this desire. Yeah, we are doing this austerity now to get something, you know, to go to heaven, straight to heaven. So it's not easy just to give that up, the desire for personal gain. But that's the standard which we aspire for. That's our goal. And also Rupa Goswami gives the describes in a very very clear and simple way right in the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anyone remembers which is that verse where he describes Uttama Bhakti? 1111. It's 1111. It's about jnana and karma. That you do something without jnana, karma, and other things. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma anavritam anukulena shilanam bhaktiruttam uchite. So it's devotional service, or highest platform, pure devotional service, Uttama Bhakti, is defined as follows. It's anya bilashita. Anya bilashita means all kinds of desires, shunya, void. You don't have desires for any personal gain. Jnana karma anadi, and it's like jnana karma and other things, it's not mixed. You don't have anything. So you may perform bhakti yoga, but usually it's mishra bhakti yoga. We have some traces either of karma, of jnana, of yoga. Even if we are not so much aware, but these desires which we have are expressions of some impurities, of mishra, mixture. But a pure uttama is no. Jnana karma navritam shilanam bhakti ruchit. So it's like shilanam means activity. So you do anukulena is like it's the later on he describes, quoting Narada Pancharat, that it's hrishikena hrishikesha. It's performing something, you know, using your senses, serving with the senses. It's not just a concept also that, yes, you give up everything and there is nothing. No, there is activity, shilanam, and that activity is engaging your senses in the service of the Supreme Lord, of Supreme Lord senses. So that means that there is active work, you know, to please the Lord. Or this Uttama Bhakti means that you act for the Lord on His behalf, to please Him. And that was also a standard which Prabhupada established many times. He emphasized that Bhakti Yoga, why he translates Bhakti, if you read many books, there are many books on Bhakti by devotees and by scholars, usually translated as devotion, love, and like that. So, but Prabhupada translates it as devotional service. So devotional service. So makes it clear always bhakti is devotional service. It's service, is doing something. And that's actually the expression of love. It's not just love. It's not a feeling. The feeling is there, or especially it comes when we attain higher stages of devotional development, and as these sentiments which are already in our heart. That's also described in Rupa Goswami in the beginning of of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that by performing sadhana bhakti or regular devotional service following the principles, what's the definition of sadhana? Sadhana is that which leads us to awakening of nityasya bhava, of the eternal bhava which we have for Krishna. So these feelings come, but even without the feelings we have, even without that we can perform pure devotional service. We just act like that. If we just act completely with the desire of pleasing Krishna only. And that means actively doing something for Krishna, using our senses. And so what is the opposite of acting and doing something? Is being inert, lazy. So there was one famous writer, he described an interesting way, he describes love, that it's not just a sentiment. It's not as romantic. That's the mistake of. And he talks about material, emotional state, and what is material definition of love. But he gives it as something. Two components of real love is work and courage. It means that you overcome your laziness and your fear. And I thought, you know, this is what exactly Prabhupada gave us and demonstrated himself. You know, you surrender and you give up everything and you do. You overcome your laziness and do something for Krishna, and also your fear of so many things. You are courageous to do something for Krishna and ready to risk something. So that's the standard of Goloka Vrindavan. They are pure devotees. You know, you hear the descriptions of the associates of Lord Krishna, for example, Raghunath Das Goswami's Vraja Vilas. And he uses one expression like, and they are ready, or he or she, when he speaks of different devotees, like in the verse, part of the description of that particular devotee is ready to give his or her life millions of time, or Krishna is dear, more dear than millions of lives, you know. So it's you know, I guess it's just a nice expression of to say that, you know, they just forget themselves. It's just Krishna is so precious, and Krishna's happiness is so precious. And of course we say, yes, that's the only way to become happy, that's true. But we many times emphasize it like that, you know, you forget about jnana and yoga and karma because you'll never get really happy. If you want to be happy, to get the real thing for yourself, then you do bhakti. But when you come to pure bhakti, then you don't really think about yourself anymore, that I become also happy, or I become happy through happiness of Krishna. It's just Krishna's happiness. You just don't care. I mean, I remember one lecture Prabhupada said it in such a way, it stays in my mind the way it's. That's why I think it's good to hear Prabhupada. When reading is something, but when you hear it, how he says it, it's so much more real. He says, our happiness? Who cares about your happiness? And, you know, it can sound strange because, you know, we really care about our happiness. That's why we, you know, whatever we do, we somehow calculate or think about and how I can, you know, become happy, avoid pain and so many things. But Prabhupada says, you know, if we want real happiness, that's, but in this particular case, he was describing that Uttama Bhakti. And he was saying, my happiness, who cares about my happiness? We just do service to please Krishna. So that is, and that, you know, many, you see, deviations in Gaudiya Vaishnavism are especially weak in that point. That, yeah, no, you don't, you just do bhakti, and bhakti, they turn it to something sentimental, and that's the real thing, you know, emotion. So if you have emotions and exhibit them either naturally or with the help of some chili powder, you know, and you throw in your eyes, you start crying and rolling in the ground while singing, and that's the real devotion. But this is just cheating, you know, cheating others, cheating yourself, and, you know, not restricting your senses and not doing anything practical. And Prabhupada was very cautious about it. Whenever devotees, even in the beginning, they were turning into that sahajya, or prakriti sahajya mentality, the famous Gopi Club in the LA, you know, BBT devotees who are putting together Chaitanya Charitamrita. So those chapters describing the highest level of devotion exhibited by the gopis to Krishna, so they think, yeah, that's the highest thing. And when we should just concentrate on reading that and hearing that and just entering into mood in the gopis. So Bhagavad Gita, all that, it's just almost Maya. Don't read Bhagavad Gita. It's not even given by Krishna, by a real Krishna. It's Vasudev Krishna. You know, it's not. Krishna in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada heard that, and I think I heard it from, who was the servant at that time? I think it must have been Shuddha Kirjuru. I don't remember. This happened in the mid-70s. And so anyway, the servant remembers Prabhupada heard that, and I think he was preparing to shave. So he couldn't continue, you know. He just stopped, you know, and he was turning back, and
Who do they think they are? How can they, who, what do they know about love for Krishna? And he was particularly angry about, he heard one of their things, that even Mother Yashoda's devotion is low class, you know, it's gopis. And then, what do they know about Mother Yashoda's love? And he was so angry, just starting to shave again, stopping and turning to that devotee. You know, just become so angry for, what I heard was like, well, almost for 1 hour, Prabhupada was so angry. That, and then he said, everything will be spoiled. Everything will be spoiled. So, you know, this is very important. We don't get it wrong. It's just, it's very clear. We have to do practical devotional service. And when the sentiment comes, it comes, and you don't exhibit it anyway, because that's the standard of our acharyas. It's something internal. It's confidential. That's why also this talk about who is Prabhupada, his Siddharupa, and who is that. Why? You know, he's confidential servant. Why we should, you know, go into the that's why it's confidential. And then Prabhupada, when he was asked, he said, when you're ready, I will tell you personally. Or when you come to the spiritual world, you recognize me. Why you bother with this? But somehow, sometimes we want to know who he is, who we are. And if I don't want, what is my eternal rasa with Krishna? How can I serve Krishna? You know, these ideas are there, so that's why Prabhupada didn't give it us. He gave us the beginning, but later on we have to go higher and go and get the real thing. That's not what at least Prabhupada gave us. And in one Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj, in one of his Vyasa Puja offerings, very short, he said, Prabhupada, I want your Krishna. So I very much like that, because yes, the way Prabhupada gave us Krishna, and that Krishna which Prabhupada gives in his books and his instructions and teaching and example, that's the most attractive, at least for me. That's the Krishna we want. And he said that the standard of the symptoms of somebody who attains these levels, also it's not something exhibited on the level of just feelings or something like it. It's just practical service and practical renunciation. Yeah, it's true. We were discussing like yesterday that austerities are not necessary. It's true. And bhakti yoga is an easy process, but actually the result of bhakti yoga is that naturally you perform austerities, or actually naturally what happens. That's how Prabhupada defines advancement in spiritual life. He says to make material activities zero. He says, what are material activities? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And in one lecture he said, so these four things we have to make zero, you know. No, nothing. And then you think, how can you make sleeping and eating zero? So he said, yeah, at least reduce them to minimum. And he said, so just look, sex life, that you can immediately give up. And then you hear, oh my God. that you don't even have. That you immediately give up right from the beginning. Then defense, yeah, you surrender to Krishna. Don't bother about your maintenance. Your Krishna will take care. And then eating and sleeping, well, take some time to reduce them almost to nothing. But it's possible. It's not. And so we heard also recently when Prabhupada stopped the end eating, one thing he mentioned was that he said, well, sleeping I almost gave up, you know, I reduced it to, you know, a few hours since quite some time already, but I couldn't control my tongue. I continue eating. But now, by Krishna's mercy, I cannot. I naturally now I can control my eating, so I don't need to eat anymore. Devotees suffered very much, but seeing him like that, but that's what Prabhupada's mood. He expressed it like that. So that's the standard. And he said, it's possible. It's possible to attain that. And that should be our goal. So thank you very much. I went a little over time. Are there any questions, comments? Yes, bro.
Yeah, is there anything known about what Prabhupada ate when he was in the beginning in America, when he was on his own, more or less? Accepting the law from his devotees that they cooked for him, and he had learned them how to cook and offer to the Lord. but that he himself could do without. Is there anything known about
it? I don't know, maybe Madhav Vishaka can say something. Yeah, he. I think what I understood, he just pretty much followed his standard diet. You know, with this cooker, when devotees start cooking for him, that's what they cooked always. Chapati, dal, sabji, things like that. And even that was not like Shruti Kirtipur describes. You know, he tried his best, but one day, you know, they were in Vrindavan and Prabhupada said, now today Yamuna will cook for me. And then she cooked and Prabhupada told Shruti Kirtipur, so come now, you take. And he was like, he never took prasam because he was just a servant, but this time he said, yeah, just come. And then Shruti Kirtipur described, you know, and then I tasted this prasam and it was like, wow. And he was, and Prabhupada, so what do you think? And Shruti Kirtipur was like, wow, it's wonderful. And Prabhupada said, yes. So now she cooked for us, tomorrow you cook for her. That's devotee. And Shruti Kirtipur was, I never fulfilled that. I said, yes, but I never cooked for her. But he said, so Prabhupada once commented about his cooking, well, it's a kind of nice American prasadam. But it's the same type of things, you know. He didn't take something special, or I don't know what if you were asking about that, just to please his disciples, whatever he wanted. It was just the standard thing. Yes.
Yeah.
There are many ways you can discuss, depends who you're talking about, what kind of exactly Mayavadi they are, or if they are just impersonalists who, you know, because some of them are offensive, and you cannot in any way convince them. But those who are just the Brahma Gyanis, the Brahmavadis, they just want to attain Brahman, and they're just bewildered. They're thinking that, yes, as you said, emotions are just some low level, and you do bhakti, you worship God, but God is also ultimately kind of a new Saguna Brahman. It's like Brahman with qualities, but the highest Brahman is Nirguna, it's God without any qualities. And that's our goal. So we also have to eventually give up qualities, emotions, all that. But if they are open, then you can talk to them. That's the first thing. And explain that. I mean, it's a matter of desire, actually. Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita says, well, there's not much difference. in one sense, you know, because we're both on a spiritual path. And in one purport, he says even that that desire, you know, is you know, you say vice versa. We say this is a stepping stone, you know? And it's a good. Prabhupada encourages that with it's a good thing to start with, but then you need to give up. But some people or some souls, they're more attracted to the end goal. We're more attracted to exchange. I just, you know, reading sometimes about the concept, this impersonal concept, I cannot relate to it. You know, I cannot understand why you would desire that. And I guess, you know, for somebody reading the bhakti, they also appreciate, but they cannot relate much to that. So it's a matter of taste. And if somebody is attracted, you can say why you are attracted to become a stone. Why you want to become, you know, one reason, as Prabhupada says, is you're really disappointed with material emotions, material varieties, material relationships. So that's why you want to give up and become stone. But is that logically the highest thing you can be, you know, just be a stone? You know, it's just doesn't very appealing. But if you understand that there are super excellent exchanges of and relationships, that there is no comparison to that, and that's the goal of bhakti. Yes, in the beginning we give up material emotions, that's our goal, we try to give up because that's an impediment, but when the real spiritual emotions come, then there is nothing to compare with that. You know, our acharyas say the idea of impersonal revelation is worse than hell. You know, it's like, oh, what is this? You know, how can you think even of? But still, many people, just like there was one of the fathers of modern yoga, you know, in yoga in this Ashtanga yoga process in the West, he's a Sri Vaishnava, as Krishnamacharya from South India, and his disciples went in the West, like Iyengar and Desikachar and Patapi Joyce and many who became the leaders of the Western yoga. But he is a Sri Vaishnava, but you read the books of his disciples and you don't see, you know, even one, you know, as one Sri Vatsa Ramaswami, who studied with him 40 years. 40 years he was going, you know, and he's describing, yes, my guru was Sri Vaishnava, you know, he's described his worship, he lived 100 years, he passed away at 101 in 80 something, so he was until 90 something, he was 99 maybe, he was doing his puja, you know, for worship, deity worship, every morning, that's his sadhana, he's just waking up and then they can hear his bell, you know, ringing and doing his puja. And this is described by this, but he's talking about Kaivalya, impersonal revelation, because that's what he's attracted to, this Sri Vatsa Ramaswami. I just can't understand, you know, you get so much association of a devotee, you know, and then you're not attracted to bhakti. And he recognizes, yes, the bhaktas, they want other types of mukti, you know, but we want sayujya. Lord Kapila says, my devotees, they want... You know, he again talks about the Suttama Bhakti. They don't want Sayuja, is like even unheard of, but even the other four, they don't want. So, I mean, you can explain, give quotes of the Shastras. There are many quotes from Bhagavatam, from other places, that describe the superiority of bhakti. That's also the purpose, one of the purposes of Nectar of Devotion, to actually show us what is real bhakti and why it's so superior, why it's so rare, why it's so precious. But if they hear, that's the way, you know, that's the way they become attracted, by association and by hearing. I mean, just like a short story which Indra Dumna Maharaj wrote recently in his traveling, they met a yogi in Vrindavan, in Delhi, in New Delhi, in some park. They were just walking before going to Vrindavan after arriving in the airport, so, and doing some shopping. So they went and they saw in a kind of a hill in a forest, nice park in Delhi, one yogi. So he said, wow, this looks serious, this man, you know. And they went and asked him after he finished doing his asana, so who are you? What? He said, I'm just doing yoga since 40 years here in the same place. I was 9 or 10 years, and there was a yogi came, passed by here. He was on his way for Kumbh Mela, and I was interested. All the others were playing in the park, all the other kids, they just laugh at him, but I really wanted to know something, and he started teaching me, and he stayed for a couple of weeks or a month or something. And he taught me, and I just started doing that, and I'm doing it since 40 years. So... and he said, but what are you working for? What is your job, you know, what do you work? And he said, that's my job, to get out of this world. So I'm doing yoga for 8 hours a day here. And he has a kind of place nearby, just a room to sleep. And he teaches yoga sometimes, just maybe to pay the room and get some food. And, you know, Indra Dumna Maharaj was very impressed. So he started to tell him about Vrindavana, well, we are going to Vrindavana, and then you have to come, you know, because he said, no. He was asking, why are you in the middle of this city, Maharaj? Why you don't go to Hrishikesh and all these places in the Himalayas? That's where the yogis are. And this yogi said, everywhere is the same. It doesn't matter. It's a matter of where, you know, your consciousness is. But Indra Maharaj started preaching, but Vrindavan is a really special place, and then you can really perceive Lord Krishna. And then, you know, first, yeah, it's the same. And then somehow he persisted, now we are going, if you want, I'll pay you for your... And then suddenly he took out his things, I'm going now. Okay, how? And he said, yeah, just take the bus, because we have to stay and do some other things here in Delhi. And then here's the phone number, you call us in the mobile when you arrive. So he said, yes. And he took and he bought a ticket, and after a few hours he arrived and he called, I'm here, what to do now? Oh, just wait when we come. And they did parikrama with him. And he was like so impressed. And then Indra Maharaj, okay, are you staying here? I will arrange for you. You know, just stay, renounce everything and do your things here. Just start devotional service. And then, before that, he looked at Maharaj and he said, you look very sick. And that's how Maharaj started the story. After being, in Polish summer festival, he was really exhausted. He collapsed, actually, and he couldn't walk. And he said, yeah, the body after so much effort, somehow, you know, in this age. And then, you know, the yogi could see, you know, the signs that he was exhausted. And he said, I should teach you some yoga to really improve your health. So he started teaching, and then Maharaj said, but it was difficult, you know, I was falling down. And then this yogi said, and Maharaj said, please excuse me, but, you know, at this age, it will take me some time. So then he started preaching to the yogi, you should stay here, I'll arrange for your maintenance and everything. And the yogi said, well, just like you practice bhakti for 40 years and now it's difficult for you immediately to get to other yoga, it's also for me, it will take some time. It will take some time, give me some time. So he went back to Delhi, but his heart stayed, and that's how he was described. So, you know, that's a typical example of somebody who is like impersonal in his desire by association, you know, he hears and he becomes attracted. So I think that's how we can help others. That's what Prabhupada says, you know, by pure luck, if they get association of pure devotee, they become transferred. Yes, Madhaji, and we can stop. Last thing. Yeah.
You were saying how much should we look for happiness for ourselves if we all have that. But the soul is a special shipping by nature. It's kind of a natural problem to look for happiness or look for comfortable situation.
Yeah, it's something which... like Prabhupada says, artificially positioned on the mind. It's not that you kind of renounce happiness, the idea of happiness in your mind. You cannot really artificially do it. It's a natural development when you attain a higher level of devotional service. You are not concerned about your personal happiness. You're concerned about someone else's happiness. And that's the soul, it's the happiness and the joy. But that joy is like the joy of someone else. And that's pure love, you know. Pure love comes, even here we have some kind of glimpse, examples of that for a very short time, you know, if mother or some lovers for a short time, you know, they can really dedicate, completely forget of themselves, it's just the other person is there to please him, care, and like that. But that's there all the time, eternally, you know, completely giving yourself. So it's not that you renounce yourself, you kind of try to push away, oh, happiness is coming, I desire to become happy, but I push it away, and it's like self-denial or something. But it's the other type of desire for happiness for someone else. And then that's, you know, it's desire for your happiness, but your happiness comes from seeing the other person happy, your object of love happy. That makes you really happy. So that really strong longing for your happiness is by seeing someone else happy, in this case Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. We have to stop. Shilbubad ki jai.